So as of this week, we pull ahead here in Eretz Yisrael. We have Parshas Kedoshim, and I do not believe that Chutz Laretz will catch up with us until a good few weeks' time. Parshas Matos Maseh, I think. So we're... So Parshas Kedoshim has, of course, many mitzvahs and many different types of mitzvahs. Rashi famously says, "Rov gufei Torah teluyim bo." Many major Torah principles are to be found there. And I'd like to take a look at a few of them, in fact, maybe one or two that we have not seen or examined in the past. And let's begin by considering Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yudalet. Pasuk Yudalet reads, Lo tekalel cheresh, do not curse a deaf person. V'lefnei iver, lo sitein michshol, and do not place a stumbling block in front of a blind man. V'yareisa mielokecha ani Hashem. Interestingly, the two terms, and of course they're quite apropos of each other, cursing the deaf man, causing the blind man to stumble, we see from Chazal that here the concept of cheresh and iver isn't necessarily someone who's deaf, incapable of hearing, or blind, incapable of seeing, but he can't hear this, or he can't see this. In this instance, he is deaf to what you are saying, or blind to what you are saying, in that he is either not there, or whatever it may be. And interestingly, the delicacy of Unkelus's translation, when it says lo tekalel cheresh, lo telut delo shema, someone who doesn't hear. Now the Hebrew word for the Aramaic for cheresh is charasha. That's someone who can't, who's deaf. And moreover, lifnei iver, says Unkelus, kadam delo chaze, before someone who doesn't see. Again, Unkelus is really translating this in operational terms, not so much someone who physically cannot hear or see, but someone who in this situation can't hear or see. Our attention is normally devoted to the second of these prohibitions, lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. There's so much to say about it, the stumbling block in front of a blind man, many different scenarios in terms of making an opportunity for an aveira available to him. But I specifically would like to take a look at the first part of the pasuk, lo techalel cheresh, the cursing of the deaf person. Of course, we understand, even having formatted it, so to speak, through Unkelus, that it's someone who can't hear you. It's not limited to someone who can't hear you. The point of the pasuk is that even if he can't hear you, meaning if he can, so all the more so. But even a cheresh, lo techalel. If he can hear you, so then that's a terrible situation. You're cursing him, and he hears what you're saying. That's worse. But even if he doesn't hear you, still the Torah says, lo tekalel cheresh. And the question we may ask is, why not? If he can't hear you, so then what's the problem? Someone has to ask. And interestingly, as we will see, there is a major machlokas here among the Rishonim as to what exactly is the problem with cursing someone if he can't hear you. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos provides the reason and states, "Kidei shelo yaniya nefesh hamikalel el hanekama," so that the soul of the one who's cursing, it should not be drawn after an attitude of vengeance. V'leyar gileno lichos, he shouldn't get into the habit of being angry. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is, if he can't hear you, so then no harm is really being done to him. He doesn't feel bad because he can't hear you. So why is it also? And here, the Rambam says it's also because of what it's doing to you. The Torah is protecting the person from falling into these terrible habits of cursing someone that he doesn't agree with what they're doing or how they've acted towards him. These are very low forms of behavior, and therefore the Torah outlaws any such activities in order to protect the would-be curser from falling into such low behavior. And these words of the Rambam are quoted by the Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Reish Lamed Aleph, and the Chinuch notes that really part of what the Rambam is saying is that the curse itself doesn't seem to make a difference. If you curse someone, nothing cosmically will change. Nothing will happen to him that wouldn't have happened had you not cursed him. It's about an attitude. It's about behavior. It's about the way to act towards someone. And on this matter, the Sefer HaChinuch himself parts ways with the Rambam. And he really seems to understand that there's something categorically wrong with the curse. And that's what the Torah is looking to prevent. Mishar Sheha Mitzvah, says the Chinuch. Shemina Anu Hashem Meazik Befinu Lezulateinu. Hashem is telling us, preventing us from damaging, from causing damage to someone else through speech. As surely as the Torah prohibits us from damaging them physically. And a similar idea is mentioned in the Gemara, in Maseches Moed Katan, Daf Yud Ches, Beris Krusa Lasfasayim. Beris Krusa Lasfasayim means that words can have an effect. If someone says something, it can change the situation. If he speaks negatively or enunciates a negative wish, it can make a difference. Brisk crucibles fasayim. Now, how are we to understand this? If you damage someone physically, so then those are the laws of physics. But to curse someone, and that should actually affect them or impact them. Ve'efshalonu lomar lefi anias da'ateinu. I would like to suggest, says the Chinuch, in my humble opinion, ki bihiyos ha'nefesh ha'medaberes sheba adam chelek elyoni. Since the faculty of speech within a person is a very high and elevated faculty, where does the faculty of speech come from? Its inception is with the words Vayipach ba'apav, Nishmas Chaim. Hashem breathed into Adam, Nishmas Chaim, living soul, soul of life, Betirgim Unculus, and Unculus translates those words, as is well known, Leruach Memalala, into a talking spirit. That means that speech is an expression of a very elevated, the most elevated faculty and element within a person, and as the most elevated, it also has a great deal of influence. Nasamba koach rav lif'ol. It therefore has the power to act and effect afilu b'mashu chutz mimena, even something which is outside of it. Of course, says the Chinuch, the more a person protects his faculty of speech, the more developed it will be and the more potent it will be. But on some level, it can take effect with anyone. And therefore, the Torah says, it's not about him hearing you, even if he's deaf or even if he's deaf to what you're saying and he can't hear you. It's a form of damage as surely as physical damage. So these are two, as we say, quite different approaches to the Torah's prohibition of lo tikalel cheresh. Again, we reiterate, but for the Rambam, it's about protecting the curser from acting in such a despicable way of giving expression to such things, even if they don't actually make a difference, whereas the Chinuch, based on the Gemara there, is more inclined to say that they actually do make a difference. He can't hear you, but he may stumble based on something that you said. Words can have that effect. And it's not clear as to which is the final position that the Sefer HaChinuch adopts. This version of the Sefer HaChinuch concludes, V'chol divrei Rabboteinu nikabel. We will accept the words of Rabboteinu, namely the Gemara over the Rambam. In my other edition, and I only have two of the Sefer HaChinuch, the Girsa is kol divrei Rabbeinu nikabel, and it sounds like he's more inclined to accept the Rambam. One would need to to follow that up. But in any case, both of them, and it could be Elu ve'Elu in a certain sense, are important perspectives with regards to Lo Tekalel Cheresh, important to pay attention to what we say. I'm reminded, in fact, there is a just the notion that words can do damage. The famous Gemara in Maseches Baba Kama and Daf Lamed, which gives advice to someone who wishes to become a chosid. Subsequently to the Gemara, there are other recommendations, but for the Gemara, Hayman deboy lemevi chasida, if a person wants to be a chosid, the Gemara has three areas that he should pay specific attention to. Some say mili denizikin, matters of damage, he should remove himself, prevent himself from doing damage to the nth degree. Others say mili de'ovos, he should look into Pirkei Avos and keep all of that. And others say mili de'brachos, he should keep the halachos of brachos very scrupulously and very carefully. And there's much discussion amongst the Mefarshim as to what these three areas represent. But there is a fascinating and very beautiful interpretation of the Sefer Ben Yehoyada, that is the Ben Ishchai, Rabbi Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, in his Chidush Yagodas, Ben Yehoyada. And unlike everyone else, he takes the term mili, which in Aramaic is divrei. And therefore, when it talks about divrei nezikin, and divrei brachos, and divrei avos, and all other mefarshim understand, it means matters of damage, matters of pirkei avos, etc. But the Ben Yehoyada says, mili can be translated as words. If a person wishes to be a chassid, so he's being told he should take care, and he gives beautiful interpretations now. Mili de brachos, let him pay attention to the words of the brachos that he's saying. Every bracha that he says is expressing some very important facet of Judaism. Let him hear that and pay attention to it. Some say, says the Ben Yehoyada, mili de nezikin, words of damage. If a person wishes to be a chassid, he should be especially careful that he doesn't damage even with his words, because words can damage, either through upsetting someone, whether they're there, whether they're not there. This is, once again, is the idea of the effect of words. Mili dinazikin, damaging words. And finally, says Ben Yehoyada, there was one opinion in the Gemara that he should take care of mili de avos, words of avos. What are words of avos? Says the Ben Yehoyada, it refers to the words of the avos. Let Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. If you look through Chumash Bereishis, it's the story of the avos. Says Ben Yehoyada, look how they speak. Look how they speak to others. Look how they speak to each other. There's so much to learn from there. See how courteous they are. See how mild they are. See how easygoing they are. See how respectful they are. That's mili de avos. That's learned from the words of the avos. So that's the wonderful interpretation of the Ben Ishchai on those three milis. For one who wants to be a chassid, and of course we relate it back to us, Lo Tekalel Cheresh is mili dinazikin, damaging words the Torah has warned us against. Now, I'd like to move to one of the major discussions here of Parshas Kedoshim, which is in the very next pasuk, Pasuk Tetvav, Lo Tasu Avel Bamishpat. Do not pervert justice. Do not do any wrongdoing in justice. Lo tisa pnei dal. Don't favor the poor person. Lo teda pnei gadol. Do not equally show favor to a great person. Everyone is equal in the eyes of the law. Bet tzedek tishbot amitecha. Judge your fellow with tzedek, through justice. Bet tzedek tishbot amitecha. And once again, we turn to the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos to understand what Betzedek Tishbet Amitecha means. The judgment itself should be Betzedek. And this is in Mitzvahs Asei Kuf Ayin Zayin. Rambam explains, Shinitztavinu, Shinitztavu HaDayonim, Lahashvos Ben Ba'ali Dinim. The judges are commanded to equate the two litigants. In what sense? V'sheyiyeh nishma kol echad mehem. They should give each one a similar hearing. Im ortavarov o kitzuran. whether they speak for a long time, whether they speak for a short time, hear them out, both of them. V'hu amar yisbarach, that's why the Torah says, b'tzedek tishpot amitecha. And he quotes, goes on to quote the Torah's Kohanim, explains this way. You can't give one of them the floor, and he can hold forth and tell you his whole life story, and then everything about his view. And then the second one, all of a sudden you're looking at the watch and he's only got 30 seconds, because that person then gets flustered and he's not able to present himself correctly. And at the end of the day, you'll say, well, I'm much more convinced by the first one's claims. Of course you are. You gave him all the time in the world. And therefore, b'tzedek tishpot amitecha means give each side ample time. Do not show any disparity in the opportunities that you give each side to present their case. Very interesting. And very true, one may add as well, outside of the courtroom. You hear two sides of the story. By the time you hear the second side, it's already, you're half lot nestling. But then, says Rambam, v'yesh bo od. There's another aspect to this mitzvah of b'tzedek tishpot amitecha, very different than what we've discussed so far, and that is shera'ui ladun es chaveiro lekafzuchus. You should judge your fellow favorably. V'lo yifarish ma'asa v'dvarav ela letov v'chesed. And you should interpret his words and his deeds in a favorable light. So this is very interesting, because according to the Rambam, the pasuk b'tzedek tishpot amitecha contains within it two elements, and they're quite different from each other, actually, as we said. The first is for the judge, and the two litigants are before you. It's about how to conduct a hearing, a din Torah. And the second really is for everyone. Dan l'kafzchus, which is a concept we're quite familiar with. And in fact, the Rambam's source for the second explanation of the second element is the Gemara in Maseches Shavuos and Daf Lamed Omed Aleph, Betzedek Tishpot Amitecha Hevidan Es Chavercha Lekafsechus. What's interesting is these words now house these two different mitzvahs, shall we say, to see how the words Betzedek Tishpot Amitecha mean these two things. For as the Malbim points out, if we pay attention to the delicacy of the phraseology here, b'tzedek tishpot amitecha, the word tzedek is used slightly differently between these two parts of the mitzvah. For the first part of the mitzvah, which is about giving, the judge should give each one a fair hearing. So b'tzedek is in the sense of do what's just. As to say, you should through tzedek come to judge. It's about the process, should be a tzedek process, upon which you will then judge. Whereas according to the second, which is about always coming to a favorable conclusion about danes chavero lekafzuchus, so the word tzedek actually isn't so much with the one who's judging, but it's with the one who's being judged. But tzedek tishpot amitecha means in the sense of assume that he is doing the right thing. Assume that the tzedek is with him. And judge him lekafzuchus. So here's the Malbim making sure to see how the intonation here is different for these two emanations of the pasuk. Again, if it's about you judging fairly, so you judge b'tzedek. Tzedek should be with you as you judge. Whereas for the dan lekafzuchus, it's about assuming that the tzedek is with the person that you're thinking about. He has the tzedek. He presumably is doing the right thing, even if it doesn't always look like that. And these two explanations, both from Chazal, as we said, are to be found in Rashi, which means Rashi sees room even on a pshat level for both of them. On the words b'tzedek tishpot amitecha, Rashi's first comment is k'mashma'o, as it implies, meaning the simple, judge him with justice. Fair. Davar acher, says Rashi, judge your fellow on a scale of good merit. So Rashi has brought both Perushim within the context of his Perush on the Torah. And of course the question is, Rashi comes, al derech hapshat, ani lo basi elo liyashiv pshuto shamikra. Pshuto shamikra would certainly seem to be the first way. But tzedek, b'tishpot amitecha, is about justice, especially as, look at the first part of the pasuk. Lotasu ava ba mishpat, don't favor the poor, don't favor the the grand, that's a bezdin. But tzedek tushvat amitecha, as Rashi himself says, kemashmo. He doesn't even explain what that might mean because it's so obvious what it means. Why then would there be room for a second perish of dan lekapsuchus? Well, the maskil ledavid, Rabbi David Pardo, explains very simply that Rashi's bothered by the fact that although these words seem to mean judge him fairly, that's basically already been said in the first part of the pasuk. I mean, that's lotasu avaba mishpat, do not pervert justice, lotisa bnei dal, don't favor him. That's all about judging people fairly. In which case, by the time it comes to the final phrase, betzedek tushla vitecha, it suffers somewhat from redundancy. You're stating generally what you've already stated much more specifically, and that's why Rashi sees that there's room for another understanding of these words completely, beyond what the pasuk seems to be talking about. Although, we may add, certainly according to the Rambam that we just read, perhaps there is no redundancy, because perhaps the earlier phrases and this phrase, although they're talking about the same idea, they're not talking about the same thing. For the earlier phrases, lo sisa pnei dal, lo seda pnei gadol, are about changing what should be the verdict due to someone's circumstances. Rashi himself says, amazing explanations as to why we might think that it would be perhaps acceptable to favor the poor or acceptable to favor the rich. Lotisa Pnei Dal, says Rashi, don't favor the poor. Shelo Tomar, do not say, Ani Huzeh, this person is poor, and the one who has it in Torah with is rich. Ve'oshir chayev leparnaso, really, this rich person has a mitzvah to support him, because that's a mitzvah of tzedakah. And therefore, as much as they found their way into a din Torah, I'm not sure which one is right, but I do know that it's wrong for this rich person to stand by, even forget about their din Torah, and see this poor person suffering. He should be helping him out anyway. So I'll help him out by giving him a verdict. As a kenu bedin, I'll smooth things out. I'll vindicate the poor person. Venimsa misparnis benekius, and then he'll end up getting his parnasa, which is due to him anyway, through a din Torah. He won't even feel bad. He won't even feel like a schnorrer. He'll have a story in the press. Now he's the victor. So what's interesting is you may look to impose one legal obligation and turn it into another. Does the rich person, is he obligated to pay the poor person? Yes, to a degree. Not because of the din Torah, but because of tzedakah. So I'll take his tzedakah, I'll make an executive decision really on his behalf, he's not really forthcoming tzedakah-wise, so I'll extract the tzedakah money from him in the form of din Torah money, and then he'll get his mitzvah in the end. That actually doesn't sound like such a bad idea, but it is. And the Torah says don't do it. But that's that part. Or, loted apnei gadol, don't favor the rich person. Why would you favor him? Not just to pander to him, which is, of course, morally wrong on every level. Shelo tomar, perhaps you'll say, Ari huzeh. He's a well-off person. Ben gedolim huzeh. He comes from such an aristocratic family. Pillars of the community. Such great standing. Heyacha vaisheno, if he loses it in Torah, what a bush it will be. Ve'erebe boshto. And then I will be the one for bringing such shame on him. Onishish badover. Maybe that's wrong for me to put him through all of that. And therefore, maybe I'll award him the din Torah and have a word with him afterwards. So all of these are, in a sense, meta concerns. Beyond the din Torah, somehow to use the din Torah as a vehicle for taking care of other things, the Torah says, don't do any of that. But the point is, these earlier phrases are about twisting the verdict. But then the final phrase is about mishandling the process. As Rambam explained, betzedek tishpat amitecha means give everyone a fair hearing. It's not about having made the decision already beforehand or having these extra curricular considerations. It's just about making sure that the din is processed correctly, in which case there's no redundancy in the pasuk because they're dealing with different aspects of the din. Nonetheless, says Muscular David, Rashi felt it did suffer a little bit from redundancy, and therefore he was inclined to bring the second perush of Dan Nakavsachos. However, don't think that's the only perush Rashi would give Dan Nakavsachos, because once again, contextually, it's so clear that the pasuk is dealing with matters of Bezdin, so Rashi also brought the first perush. So this is a classic discussion of Meforshi Rashi regarding Rashi's methodology, which perushim will he choose to bring and why. Now, what's very interesting, and I believe that the idea of Dan Nakavsachos is perhaps not always fully understood, it's very popularly spoken about, but to have a proper look at it, it's interesting to note that the Rambam has mentioned Dan Nakavsachos within a halachic discussion as part of the mitzvah of Betzedek Tishped Amitecha. And, as we said, his source is in the Gemara. Now, we're familiar, I think, with the idea of Dan Nakavsachos from a different forum. And that is from Pirkei Avos, where you have in the first perek, Aseh lecha rav v'tnei lecha chaver, ve'vedan es kol ha'odom lekavsachos. Now, is that the same thing? The Rambam, in his commentary to the Mishnayos there in Pirkei Avos, says, this is Midas Hasidus. Dan Nakavsachos, you know, could go either way, give him a favorable verdict, no, you don't really know, it looks even a bit not so glatt, but always judge him on a scale of good merit. Midas Hasidus, Mederech HaChasidus. Now, Derech HaChasidus sounds like above and beyond, it's within the letter of the law, it's the extra mile. Except Rambam and Sefer Mitzvahs told us that it's an absolute Torah obligation, Betzedek Tishped Amitecha. And similarly, in the Mishnah Torah, in Hilchos Deos, so in the fifth parak of Hilchos Deos, the Rambam records what he calls Hanhagos Haru'uyos L'Talmud Chacham. Things that a Talmud Chacham, after all, he is a Talmud Chacham, he should act in a way that's above and beyond reproach, and in a special way. And one of the things he should do, says the Rambam, is V'don es kol ha'odom lekavsachos, he judges everyone favorably. That's how a Talmud Chacham should be. But it sounds like, once again, this is not actual obligation, but rather within the letter of the law, mit derech ha'chasidus, for a Talmud Chacham. So how are we to square the words of the Rambam in his commentary to the Mishnah that says it's Derech Hasidus with the Rambam and Sefer HaMitzvos that it's a full-on obligation? And this question is addressed by the Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim, in his introduction to the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, goes through every mitzvah and aveira that a person could conceivably violate by speaking Lashon Hara. If a person reads that introduction diligently, he will be sworn off Lashon Hara for a good while. And the Rambam explains that actually there are two different scenarios here to be considered. It really makes a difference as to whether you know the person or do you not know the person. And let's perhaps preface by raising a simple question. At the end of the day, the source in the Torah for Dan Nakavsachos is Betzedek Tishped Amitecha. And it sounds like you should judge him on a scale of justice, Betzedek. Well, giving a person the benefit of the doubt, you're not sure what the circumstances are. Perhaps they look a little bit suspicious, but nonetheless, we give him a positive spin on the story. How is that Tzedek? Tzedek is justice. Tzedek is what's right. At the end of the day, you don't know what's right. And in fact, it looks even a little bit wrong. Now, you can say there's immense value in giving him the benefit of it. You can say that. It's many things. It's kind, it's nice, it's benevolent, but it's not justice. So how does this come from the word Betzedek Tishped Amitecha? Well, perhaps here we will see that it makes a difference as to whether you know the person. If you know that this is essentially a good person, what you don't know are the circumstances that surround this particular episode, but you do know the person. Well, from a certain point of view, therefore, it is Betzedek to give him a positive verdict. Because given what you know about this person, you assume that he would do the right thing. Indeed, if this is someone who typically does not do the right thing, that there is no requirement of dandakav schus. I mean, we don't have to make things up indefinitely. But it's someone who you know that generally he does do the right thing. That you know. That knowledge of the person allows you to project a positive verdict, even as the specifics of this particular situation are unknown. And therefore, we can understand why the Chofetz Chaim says that it makes a difference as to whether you know the person. If you have actual knowledge of his character and his general track record, so then it is tzedek. It is just, it is correct to assume that he's acting in character. And that's why there the Torah says, "Betzedek tishpat amitecha." However, if you don't know him, So you can assume that all Jews are holy, and you can, and it's a good thing to assume, but you don't know anything about him, someone you never met before, etc., you have no real knowledge of. So there's no actual knowledge base to go on. You don't know him, you don't know the circumstances, and therefore there is no tzedek to say, you know that what he did is the right thing. You have no basis for saying that at all. It's a good thing to assume. It is a good thing to assume. But that is already on a level which is called Midas Chassidus. There we say that it's not an actual obligation. And interestingly, just to go back to the Malbim, according to this understanding, even Dan Lekaf Schus is about you using tzedek. It's you using justice. Your justice base is your knowledge of the person, and therefore there's only an obligation when you have knowledge of the person. And indeed, says the Chofetz Chaim, if you look at all of the sources that we mentioned so far, you will see, which seem to be contradicting each other, the Gemara in Shavuos, which derives an obligation of dan lekafschus, says heveidan es chavercha lekafschus, your friend. Those words are important because chavercha means you know him, and therefore you have a basis from which to judge him favorably. And the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos likewise says od me'inyan zeh. This is in contrast to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos didn't say Hevidon es chavercha lekafschus. It says Hevidon es kol ha'odam lekafschus. Judge everyone lekafschus. Everyone, even people I don't know. Yes. Why? At derech hasidus. That's not an obligation. You don't know. There's no tzedek here, but it's a good thing to assume. And similarly, the Rambam, as he discussed this specialized ways of the Talmud Chacham and Hilchos Deos, says one of the things he does is dan es kol ha'odam lekafsechus. So how wonderfully now these two, they're really two sugyas within dan lekafsechus. If you know the person or if you don't. There's much more to say about the particulars of dan lekafsechus in terms of the practicalities. Rabbeinu Yonah and the Shari Tshuva, who's one of the primary sources, because dan lekafschus isn't spoken about in such an organized way, in the way that the halachas of kashrus and trefus and those things are. But I should mention, I think it's correct, that according to Rabbeinu Yonah, he talks about someone who's called a Yirei Elokim and someone who's called a Beinoni. A Yirei Elokim, it seems from Rabbeinu Yonah, is someone who basically never does anything wrong. Anything's possible, but basically it's completely out of character, never known to do anything wrong. For such a person, says Rabbeinu Yonah, even if the circumstances seem a little bit somewhat suspicious, seem more condemning than vindicating, it's still true to judge him lekafsechus, because you know this person never does anything wrong. There's got to be an explanation. As surely if it was someone that you knew very well, You'd understand that as much as you don't know the particulars, you know the person. There has to be an explanation. Interestingly, and again, I don't know if this is so well known or widely discussed, Rabbeinu Yonah says if he's a Beinoni, and I think most people are Beinonis, and the way that he describes him is Nizhar min achet. I think generally he doesn't do the wrong thing. Upa'amim nichshal, but sometimes he does. That sounds like many people. So there, Rabbeinu Yonah says, the only MS obligation of dan lekafschus, if it could just as equally be positive or negative. Because it could go either way, it's equiprobable. no indications one way or the other, so then done the kafsuchos. But if it does seem suspicious, so Rabbeinu Yonah says, what's the emes there? Don't judge at all. No verdict. Al tachriyehu. Because you can't ignore the fact that it seems suspicious, but you can't ignore the fact that you don't know. And the emes is, you don't know! And that's the lost verdict. Often in the discussions of Dana Kafsuchos, we always feel that we have to know. We have to give a script to the story. Sometimes you don't know. And that's the emes, is you don't know. And that's the obligation of Dana Kafsuchos. If you don't know, you don't know. You don't always have to know. For some people, that challenges the fundamentals of their belief, to tell them that they don't always have to know. Okay, that's something that can be recovered from with time. But just one final point with regards to Dan Lekaschus, because we say it's Midas Chasidus for in many situations. The Gemara in Maseches Shabbos and Daf Kuf Kaf Zayin Amud Beis says a very interesting statement about Dan Lekaschus, and basically it says, Kol Hadanes Chaver Lekaschus, if one judges his friend positively, Donin Oso Lekaschus. So he is also judged. I mean, he's judged Min Hashamayim Lekaschus. So it's a very wonderful Mida Keneged Mida. You judge people favorably, you'll be judged favorably. The question is, how is it possible to speak about a person being judged Min Hashamayim Lekaschus? There doesn't seem to be traction for a Kafschus situation here. Because the circumstances or situations that we talk about, Dan Lekaschus, means that something happened, you don't really know all the facts, you don't know all the background, you see he went into the restaurant and you're not sure why, was it pikuach nefesh or was it who knows what, and you don't know all the facts. And therefore, dan lekafschus means assume that the fact that would lead to a positive outcome, assume that they were there, in the absence of actual knowledge. That's relevant to a person being judged min hashamayim. Min hashamayim, they know the reasons why. They know all the background to his situation. And therefore, there doesn't seem to be an element left unknown that there could be a corresponding judging him on a scale of good merit. So what then is the mida keneged mida here of dan lekafschus? So, I believe that the answer is based on a Yerushalmi in Maseches Sanhedrin, in Perek Aleph. And the Yerushalmi says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu eino dan yechidi. Hashem doesn't judge alone. Af al pichein chosem yechidi. But nevertheless, he seals the judgment alone. So he doesn't judge by himself, but he seals the judgment by himself. And what does that mean? Why doesn't he judge by himself? And why does he seal the judgment by himself? The Meshech Chochma in Parshas Vayera explains that the whole concept of Bezdin Shelmala, which includes not only Hashem, who clearly is the Av Bezdin, but it has other members, so to speak, and it has the Malachim. Malachim are aware of many things, but they're not aware of the inner workings of a person, of what the person really wants, or what the person really means. There's an ongoing question as to whether Malach can know what a person is thinking. That's a famous Tosas in Masechta Shabbos. The Medrash seems to say that a Malach doesn't know what a person is thinking, but what a person deep down really wants, a Malach doesn't know. And that can make a big difference, because it doesn't necessarily always turn the wrong thing into the right thing, but it can change perspective dramatically on whatever the person has done. Because if the person's heart isn't really in it, or if he doesn't really stand by it or subscribe to it, but he did it for whatever other reason, those are things that a malach couldn't pick up on. But of course, Hashem, bochen lev v'kloyos, knows exactly where the person's real rotzon lies. And therefore, the din happens with all the malachim. When they are assembling the facts of the case, and all the facts are known. So that includes malachim, because malachim know facts. But the chasima, the sealing of the din, that Hashem does alone, because there's more to be said before the din is sealed, and those are things that only Hashem can know, as opposed to, in terms of the person, inside the person. And this brings us now to Danakaschus. At the end of the day, if Hashem will do the final verdict by himself, so what is the role of the Malachim in the initial stages? Clearly the ideal is you shouldn't have to get to the point where Hashem saves you. He reaches down inside of you and makes things okay, because inside you really didn't mean it that badly. That's what we would call bidyeved. Sometimes it's necessary, but it's bidyeved. Ideally, a person would like to be exonerated by all of Beis Din Shel Ma'alah, meaning even Malachim, you shouldn't need to see what's inside of you for you to be vindicated, that you did the right thing. In fact, I saw a number of years ago, in the name of the Vilna Gaon, we say at the end of a Kaddish Tiskabel, there are two requests. The first is Tiskabel, Tzoloson, V'oson, Mikadam Avuan Divishmaya. So we ask that our tefillah should be accepted from before Avu and Bishmaya, from our Father in Heaven. The next request is Yehi Shalom Rabim Shemaya. There should be great peace from Heaven. What's the relationship between these two requests? Our tefillah should be accepted before Hashem, and Yehi Shalom Rabim Shemaya. And the Vilna Gaon says it refers to these two levels. We begin with the more humble request, as if to say, at least Hashem should accept our tefillahs. It could be that the rest of Beis Din Shel Ma'alah don't consider us worthy of having our tefillahs fulfilled. So we begin with the more modest request. Tizkabal tzalos, at least let them be received. Kadam avu and divishmaya, before our Father in Heaven, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if no one else thinks that they should be accepted. But from there, we are emboldened and we ask that let it be even Yehi Shalom Rabim Shemayim. There should be peace from heaven, meaning all of Shemayim should be in peace with us. They should all concur that we are deserving these things. These two levels of Kadam Avon Divishmaya and Shalom Rabim Shemayim from our Father in Heaven and from the totality of heaven represent these two levels that the Meshech Chochmah is talking about. And therefore, it turns out, although this is a rather esoteric discussion, that there is room for Danakaschus min HaShemayim, in the sense that the general Beis Din, they know all the facts, but not all the motivations, and not all the inner recesses, and not all of the essential desires that are in play there. And therefore, those are unknown, and they can make a big difference, both to mitzvahs and to averus. And thus we say, there is midah keneged midah. That's a slightly adjusted plane. But if a person judges others lekapsuchos, so then he is also judged lekapsuchos. If he gives others the benefit of the doubt in his terms, vis-a-vis circumstances, so then min hashamayim. It doesn't have to get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to see that he should also be judged lekapsuchos, and all of his motivation should be considered to be as pure and as good. And perhaps there's room for just one more point here. Perhaps it goes slightly deeper. In the sense that it may be not only midah keneged midah, but through judging others favorably. That's what leads him to be judged favorably, because that then expresses how he really feels on the inside. It tends to be the case that people perceive in others their own motivations. Someone who is always critical of someone, they say that someone who's a cheat, who always assumes everyone else is cheating. Someone who's dishonest is always suspicious of everyone else. Someone who has a good heart assumes that other people have a good heart. And therefore, what's important about Danakaschus within the person is it's not only a marker of what you think about the other person, it says a lot about you. If you look at him in a positive light, that's because you are that way. And that itself may be something of an expression for the Malachim in terms of what they couldn't know otherwise. Perhaps this is how it can come out. If a person judges others favorably, that brings closer to the surface his own positive motivations, which is then the basis for Shemayim judging him favorably. So these are some comments which I believe are pertinent and meaningful with regards to Danakaschus, and of course there's yet a great deal more to say about that. I'd like to take a look briefly at one of the mitzvahs, the Averis actually. I don't think we've discussed it before, which is in Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Perek Yutes, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. And the Pasuk reads, Al Tifnu El Ha'ovos Ve'El Ha'yidonim. This Pasuk prohibits turning towards Ovos and Yidonim. Ovos and Yidonim are people that are able to commune with the spirits of the dead. Necromancy, I believe it's called. And the Torah says it's forbidden. Of course, the famous example where it happened of Balas Ov was in the story of Shaul HaMelech with the witch of Endor. She was a Balas Ov. Somehow she survived, and he went to ask about how they would do in the war, and she called up Shmuel. Shmuel told him that the war would end badly for him, that he would die the next day. That was the famous case of Balas Ov within the Novi. But, and that was actually to a certain degree an Avera, but it was done. And there's an interesting reference to the idea, to the concept of Baal Ov, in the Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin in Daf Samach Hei Amud Beis. And there it records a machlokas, a conversation between Tornus Rufus, Harosha, who was the governor there of Rome, the Roman governor in Yerushalayim, at the time of Rabbi Akiva. And there were certain conversations that they had. And one of the questions that Tornus Rufus asked Rabbi Akiva is, how do you know which day is Shabbos? Which is an interesting shaila. It's actually more interesting that that was not his original question to Rabbi Akiva. It was his second question. His original question to Rabbi Akiva was, who made Shabbos such a special day? He asked him, Mayomi Amai, how is Saturday different than Friday or Sunday? That was his opening question. Somehow he was bothered by the idea of Shabbos. So, what's it so special? Well, Rabbi Akiva said to him, Ma gever mi gufrin, what makes one person more special than anybody else? In other words, who made you the governor of Jerusalem? It's an interesting response. And Tornus Rufus answered, Demari tavi, well, my master, I found favor in his eyes, and he decided I should be so. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, well, Shabbos is the same. Shabbos nami, demari tzavi. Hashem decided Shabbos should be. So, you know, if you're the emperor can make you the governor, so the creator of the universe can make Shabbos a special day. And then he went on to the second question, which one kind of gets the feeling was trying to save a little bit from a blunder that he'd walked into. And therefore he revamped his question and said, well, how do you know that it's really Shabbos? And Rabbi Akiva answered that there are a number of indicators in the natural world. And one of them is Baal Ov Yochiach. And Baal Ov Yochiach means that there is no possibility of drawing up the spirit of the dead by a Baal Ov on Shabbos. It can be done every day of the week, but not Shabbos. So there's your, amongst others, sign that Shabbos is indeed a special day. Interesting. I guess you tell each person, talk to them in a language that they'll understand. And that was that. This Gemara precipitated a very interesting shaila. One could almost say a shaila lahalacha in the Sefer Chassidim. There's different editions of the Sefer Chassidim, but in the Madurat Forma, which has more sections than others, in section 1450. So here's the shaila. The Shoal Echan Azekenim. One of the Zakenim asked the question. We know there's a famous halacha, it's a sukkah in the Gemara. If someone's walking he's lost in the desert, he doesn't know what day it is, so what should he do? Every day, any day could be Shabbos. So, but he can't just stay put, it's pikuach nefesh. He's got to do something. And there's two opinions in the Gemara. Should he just, he's got to choose a day and call it Shabbos and rest on that day. You shouldn't forget about Shabbos until he reaches civilization. Well, what if Misha holeth Bamidbar, he's in the desert, he lost his way, he lost his sense of time, b'shochach eze yomu Shabbos. He doesn't know what day Shabbos is. That's the bad news. But potentially the good news is, there's someone else who's also lost in the desert, the Yesham Ovi Yudoni, and there's an Ov practitioner, also lost in the desert. So this is potentially a silver lining here. So could he perhaps use his services to find out what day Shabbos is. Im yochel lomar legoy lahalos b'zichura kedei sheyezo im Shabbos. Could he ask him, you know, would you mind, getting for me, connecting me with so and so? And if he's able to do it, so you know that day is not Shabbos. And if you can't, then that tells you that it could be Shabbos. No, it's an interesting shaila. The conclusion of the Sefer Hasidim is that it cannot be done. In other words, I guess it's what we would call mitzvah baba avera. The conclusion is, it's worthwhile just keeping up counting your own Shabbos, even though you don't know that it might be the right Shabbos. You could get the right answer, but the ends do not justify the means. It would be, you'd be able to know through the Baal Ov, but you're not allowed to ask a Baal Ov. And therefore, it's not acceptable.
He's doing it himself anyway. Could you use that information?
Could you overhear? Could you eavesdrop? You happen to be in the neighborhood. Yes, perhaps. Okay. Now we know. Interestingly, some Mefarshim say that this psak, this ruling of the Sefer HaChinuch, pardon me, the Sefer HaChassidim, is alluded to in the Torah. For let us go back to Pasuk Lamed Aleph, which reads, Al tifnu el ha'ovis vela yidonu. The Pasuk prohibits ov and yidoni. Okay. Parshas Kedoshim has many mitzvahs, one after the other. What is the mitzvah that immediately precedes Ov and Yidoni? Pasuk Lamed es Shabso Saitishmoru. Exhortation to keep Shabbos. Kedoshitiro and the Hashem. Says the Sefer Avnei Shoam, here is a remez to the psak of the Sefer Hasidim. The Torah says you've got to keep Shabbos under all circumstances. And even in the interest of keeping Shabbos, Al tichno la'ovos vela yidonim. That's mamish the shiloh of the Sefer Hasidim. Okay, that's a bit of a way of looking at the pasuk that we may not have engaged in otherwise. Just a final comment, which is really a very general comment, because there's the entire section of the arayos, of all those forbidden family relationships and other relationships, and they're actually split up into two, into last week's parsha and this week's parsha. In last week's parsha, acharemos, you have the azharos, the prohibitions, where the Torah says, don't do that, not that, not that, not that. And that's, as we know, the laning for Yom Kippur afternoon. In Parshas Kedoshim, at the end of this week's Parsha, you have the onshim. You have the penalties for that, and which are all of them dire. But in a sense, a simple shaila is, why are they split up in this way? As if to say, they're talking about the same thing, but in Perek Yud Ches, at the end of Acharemos, you have 20 prohibitions, and then in Perek Tes, in the end of Kedoshim, you have a corresponding 20 penalties. Why not put them all together? And this question is discussed by Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal. And he explains very beautifully that through this, the Torah is really giving us a perspective as to what the punishments of the Torah are about. Because, I mean, they're really clustered together in the end of a Kedoshim, and he'll get kares, and he'll get kares, and he'll suffer, and he'll suffer. And really the question is, why does the Torah have these punishments? And there can be many answers to this question, because there are many penal systems, lahavdil, but many societies, and so they should, dinim. They administer punishments or penalties for certain infractions. But ultimately the question is, why? Who is being protected? And here, says Rav Moshe, the common notion is that, in a sense, the victim is being protected, as if to say, if the perpetrator knows that he could be punished, so therefore that's a deterrent from the crime, and any would-be victim is now much safer. It's for the safety of society, which is a very valuable thing. But as far as the Torah is concerned, there's more to it than that. Because the goals of the Torah are not satisfied when would-be victims are safe. But rather, the point of the punishment isn't just that no one has anything stolen from them. It's that no one should steal. It's in order, the product is not just safe streets. It's moral people. And therefore the focus of the deterrent is as much, if not more, the would-be perpetrator than it is the would-be victim. We're not just saying we don't want people to get killed. Of course we don't, but we don't want people to become killers. And therefore the deterrent of the punishment is in order to ensure that someone who may do something wrong shouldn't do it. Not just that someone who would be wronged will no longer be wronged. And the way the Torah communicates that is it gives us all of the prohibitions of the arayos, and there are penalties. But the Torah doesn't get to the penalty straight away. It places in between the injunction, which is then the koteret for the whole parsha, kadoshim tiyu, be kadoshim. That's what it's about. The goal of the penalties isn't to punish the wrongdoers. It's to encourage them to aspire to what the Torah wants for the Jewish people, which is kadoshim tiyu. So this is a perspective within the realms of our relationships. It's about kedusha within the realms of mishpatim. It's about the other areas of moral behavior. But the focus of the Torah and all of its penalties is certainly not to get the person who did the wrong thing. Not only to protect someone from being abused by someone else, but protect that someone else from becoming the abuser. That's an important perspective as well. And we'll leave it over there for this.